Toksik Newsom, Slama, thank you for listening. Welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Conversations for today, November 12th, 2025. The holiday season is upon us, and it's a time of giving back to the community. First, we talk with the Glory Hall about their annual event, Empty Bowls, happening this Saturday, November 15th, with bowls made by local artists and soups and more donated by local restaurants. This unique event serves to help their emergency shelter. Then we talk with St. Vincent de Paul, another community organization working to feed those in need. Upcoming is their annual Thanksgiving Baskets event, and you can help. We find out about that and more. And then we talk with Rain Billings, who will be giving a talk with the Juno Audubon Society on Thursday, November 13th. That's tomorrow. Killer Whale Friendships, Understanding Animal Relationships for Conservation. That's all coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Bessie Cooley. And the word this week is chai.
Chai.
That means yellow cedar. And here's a sentence.
Chai. Tin shus am siach.
They made a spoon with yellow cedar. Let's hear it again.
Chai.
Yellow cedar. Gunas chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Bessie Cooley is Kokhetan and a child of a Yenyedi man. She is from Daisleen, Teslin, and grew up spending time in Teslin and around Teslin Lake. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University and interviewed many speakers for the Hashagun language series. She is currently translating projects for the Children of the Takhu Society.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Wasn't born to walk in nobody else's shoes. Wasn't put here to live a life that I didn't choose. I refuse to shrink to fit all your expectations. And I refuse to accept all your limitations. And I may not be for everybody, but you can be sure that I know my worth. I've been told that I'm a creature of disbelief. Stole a few hearts, but does that make me a lifelong thief? I walk tall 'cause of all them that paved the way. And if you were smart, you would listen to what I got to say. Well, I learned this lesson a long time ago. There are people out there who don't know. I was put on this earth to shine bright and proud. When I leave this life, my star gonna shine bright and loud. You can knock me down, but I'ma make you see. I wasn't made for you, honey. I was made for me.
Ooh, yeah, that's a little witty young man, creature of disbelief, right here on Juno Afternoon, community supported. on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ok Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Empty Bowls is a fundraiser for the Glory Hall Emergency Shelter, Soup Kitchen, and Care Center. The event features bowls made by local artists, soups donated by local restaurants, dessert, silent auction, music, friends, and everything. It's got everything. And I'm joined now in the studio to talk a little bit more about this event and the Glory Hall by Executive Director Kaya Quinto. Gwyneth Cheesh for being here. Wasita, how are you, Kaya?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much. And MC for the event, I want to hear all about this, Jordan Nigro. Gwyneth Cheesh for being here.
Hi, Boston. Thanks for having us.
Of course. It's a pleasure. So, Kaya, let me start with you. And just remind folks about the Glory Hall, because I know things have morphed over the last couple. You moved, you did everything, you're doing different things. Just give us a general overview of what the Glory Hall is for those who may not be in the know.
Yeah, absolutely. The Glory Hall has 43 rooms upstairs and then 12 bunk beds, so we provide emergency shelter to 55 individuals. Our shelter has been at capacity every single night this year so far. We also do breakfast, lunch, and dinner 365 days a year. And so we're averaging about like 190 meals per day right now.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you do breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week?
On Sundays, we do brunch and dinner.
Brunch and dinner. Yeah. Okay. But basically, you're serving folks 7 days a week. Okay. And tell me about where you're located.
We are located at 8715 Teal Street. It's behind the Nugget Mall and the Juno Auto Mall, the dealership.
Right. And so you moved from downtown. You weren't the executive director then.
No, I wasn't. Okay. I was working at the Glory Hall.
You were working. Yeah. Okay. And then they, so when they moved to Teal Street, And was it adding in beds at that point? That's when you were adding capacity for that. Do you find that you're at capacity most of the time?
Yes, every night.
Every night?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So are you looking to possibly expand?
I don't have any current plans of expanding right now, but yeah, that would be nice one day.
Because it feels like there's definite need, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and we're talking later to St. Vincent de Paul. They're doing the warming shelter this year. And there just seems like there's a need for expansion in some of these areas. I don't know what's possible. That's why I was just curious.
Yeah. I mean, we did just open phase three of Forget Me Not Manor, which provided 28 more homes.
Oh, okay. Tell me a little bit about Forget Me Not Manor.
Forget Me Not Manor is a permanent supportive housing facility.
Okay.
And right now we have 92 units.
92 units. So yes. Is that something that people are, they're renting these, or how does it work? Tell me how it works.
Yeah. So every unit comes with a lease.
Okay.
So it is their home. It comes with all the rights that come with a lease.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a pharmacy and a clinic ran by Search.
Oh, okay. And who's housed in the Forget-Me-Not Manor?
People who are considered chronically homeless or experiencing chronic homelessness.
Okay. Because I remember, I think when Maria, the former executive director, told me about that, if I'm remembering correctly, it's not used as transition necessarily, is it? It's like it's actual permanent housing.
Yeah, people can live there for the rest of their lives.
Okay, if they choose.
If they want to, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because it seems like, I mean, obviously we all know there's a housing crisis in Juno. There's definite need for more housing. So that's great. So you have the 55 emergency shelter beds, and then you have the 99 apartments, because you have the Forget-Me-Not Manor, and then there's 7 at the old shelter building downtown.
Yep.
Okay. Now, all of this, and you're feeding, you know, many people every day, 3 times a day, for every day of the week. And that, you don't close. You don't have holidays. You're open on the holidays.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, then, that seems like it takes a lot of resources to do. Yeah?
Yeah.
And that's probably why we're talking about the Empty Bowls fundraiser. Tell me a little bit about the reason behind the Empty Bowls fundraiser.
Empty Bowls is a fundraiser for the Glory Hall. It will help with running our shelter and all of the supplies, the utilities, wages, everything that comes with keeping the shelter open 24/7.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a big job.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big job for all of you involved. That's amazing. And this is the biggest. Is this your biggest fundraiser of the year?
Yes.
Okay. Do you do other fundraisers throughout the year or no?
We will do annual appeals, just like mailing out letters asking for donations.
I see.
This is our big fundraiser.
This is the event.
The event. Okay. Yeah.
And I know it's very popular. It's very popular because it's unique. And I know the Empty Bowls is not just a Juneau thing. It's actually a national movement. There's a lot of, there's a whole website. I was looking at it earlier. You can go to emptybowls.com if you want to learn about the national society version of it. But of course, you can go to housejuneau.org to find out everything that is going on at the Glory Hall and all of the different services that you are employing in taking care of the folks in Juneau in need. I think that's pretty amazing. So, Jordan, let me talk to you a little bit about the MC gig.
Don't ask me too many questions because I don't know yet.
You don't know what you're doing. It's all good. But you were previously on the board. Tell me about your involvement with the Glory Hall.
Yeah, I was on the board for just under 10 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was on the board when we moved the Glory Hall from downtown to the Valley, to the Teal Street location, and through COVID and all of that. So I stepped off the board about a year ago, I think, maybe 2 years. I don't know. But I still like to help the Glory Hall out when I can, because I think the staff there are doing some of the hardest work in Juneau. And I think it's just really important that our community helps each other out when we can. So they asked me if I would MC this year, which I've never done. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm going to give it a whirl.
It'll be great.
Fantastic. I'm sure you're going to do great. And, of course, Jordan, normally her day job is over at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Been on the show many times. Thank you. And thank you for taking on this role as an MC. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm excited to see all the great things that people will donate.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
So this is a fun event because – why is it called Empty Bowls, Kaya?
I did not start this fundraiser 19 years ago, so to tell you the truth, I don't know.
Okay. It's all good.
Well, but I think it's kind of a play on the fact that there's a lot of people in our community that don't have food.
Yeah.
And so at the Glory Hall does so much to fill people's bowls, and so this is an opportunity to come together and support the Glory Hall and also recognize that there are folks in our community that don't have full bowls, and so many people donate bowls from around the community. UAS has made bowls. Who else? Paul the Volkers family and
Don Gottschall.
Yeah, does the wooden bowls, right?
Yeah.
And so there's just a lot of folks who make this possible, and MRV Architects, Search, Sea Alaska, Hecla, to name a few. And then I'm really excited, you know, I always like, as Boston, we have discussed that I am an earring person on these very airwaves before. And I think that auctions are a great place to look for earrings in Juneau.
Oh, is there going to be some earrings
there? Yes, so Lily Hope has donated some earrings. And also Angela Brown, who is the program director at Housing First, I just learned makes beautiful earrings. I just saw her wearing these gorgeous earrings the other day, and I was like, Angela, those earrings are so beautiful. And she's like, I made them. And she's donating some to Empty Bowls. So, yeah, there'll be lots of fun stuff. Frenchies is doing the flowers this year, and then we'll auction them off. So there'll be little flowers on the table that Frenchies is doing. One of the things that we want to make sure to mention is that Wayne Stevens and the Juno Rotarians every year just are so helpful with empty bowls. And so we just couldn't do it without their volunteer support. It really makes a huge difference in the evening.
Yeah, and I guess when I was asking about the empty bowls, I was thinking about that people, because for the price of the fundraiser,
you get
to take a bowl home, right?
Yes.
And obviously there's the symbolic reason behind it, but also that you get to take a physical bowl made by some of the coolest people in Juneau.
Totally. Our cabinet is like filled with bowls from Empty Bowls. It's like where most of our bowls came from.
Yeah.
Because over the years, you just get a couple every year when you go, and it's a great deal.
And I heard a tip last year, I think it was, or maybe 2 years ago, is that you get there early.
Yeah.
Because then you get your pickup. Because all the bowls are unique,
right? All the bowls are out, and they're all unique.
And so you want to get there early. So tell me a little bit, Kaya, about the when and where. I know it's Saturday night. Tell me about, like, where do I go for information? What time does it start? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so it's 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. at Centennial Hall. And you can buy tickets ahead of time at thejack.org.
Okay.
Or you can buy them at the door. It's the same price. The price doesn't
change.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Kids are $15, but they will not get a bowl.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So if you want a bowl for your kiddo, you got to pay full price.
That's right.
And it's $65, I think, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Which I think it's been that same price for a couple years now, which is pretty great. It's a wonderful fundraiser. Let me just shout out some of the food you're going to get, right? Are these people donating food, like Grumpy's? Sawana Cafe.
Yeah, they're all donating soups.
Soups, okay. Yeah. It's Grumpy's, Sawana Cafe, Copa, Hangar on the Wharf, and Boca Alupo, Island Pub, basically every restaurant in Juneau. Rainbow Foods, Sandpiper's, Zerelda's, Pucker Wilson's, Alaska Native Brotherhood Camp 70, Spice, Danny Peterson, U.S. Foods, Indendi Subs, which is the new sub place. I had some of their soup a couple nights ago. I had the Philly cheesesteak and then the soup, and it was unbelievable.
I can't wait.
Really, really yum. And then you were mentioning you have some other sponsors or people you wanted to shout out. I want to make sure we let everybody know who's involved in this. Or did we mention everybody already? I know there's people who make the bowls too, right?
I think we talked about the bowl makers.
Okay.
I guess I would really like to thank Search and Sea Alaska and Hecla Mining Company for their generous donations.
Because they support in general too, right?
Yeah, they do so much.
Yeah, for the Glory Hall. That's amazing. And again, it's Saturday night. It's at 5 o'clock?
Yep.
Okay, from 5 to 7. And you get to see MC Jordan. Are you going to be spinning some tunes? What are you going to be doing?
Definitely not spinning tunes. Definitely not. I'll just be hoping to not, you know, fall off the stage or anything dramatic like that.
I did see that you mentioned some music. Is there some music going to be happening?
Yeah, the Juno Symphony is going to be playing.
What? Oh, that's amazing. Okay, so the symphony will be playing as well. And where is the event taking place?
Centennial Hall.
Centennial Hall.
It's going to be really fun.
That is going to
be. And also this year, one of the board members, Brendan Sullivan, is making mocktails.
Yes.
Oh.
Which he was telling me about, and they do sound very delicious. We've never had that before, so I think that will be a really nice addition.
Ah, I love that. That's really cool. So you'll get a mocktail with your soup.
That's right.
Yeah, and
do you
cookies.
Use the actual bowl that you get to get the soup?
No.
No.
Oh, so your bowl leaves
clean.
Undisturbed.
Yes.
Yeah.
As it were. That's fantastic. Empty Bowls, fundraiser for the Glory Hall Emergency Shelter, Soup Kitchen, and Care Center. You can find out more at housejuno.org. You can get tickets at jahc.org. It's this Saturday night, November 15th, 5 to 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall. And I really want to say Gwyneth Cheese to Kaya Quinto and Jordan Nigro for joining me to tell us a little bit about the event today. I really appreciate y'all being here.
Thanks, Boston.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Pleasure. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We'll be back in just a moment.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. At Juanita Nolasco Residences, an apartment complex for low-income, older, and disabled adults in Denver, residents are saving money with solar energy.
The reason why it's important to reach folks that live in multifamily housing is because they're often left out in this transition to clean energy.
Michelle Infante is with the nonprofit Energy Outreach Colorado, which has helped more than 100 residents join a community solar program. Subscriptions are entirely free to tenants.
The subscriptions themselves are completely donated. And when we tell them that it's a free program, they almost don't believe it, like it's too good to be true.
Each subscriber is assigned a portion of a solar farm owned by Pivot Energy. The utility tracks how much energy the solar farm produces each month and provides a credit on each subscriber's bill for their portion of the power.
On average, each residence there is seeing savings of $15 per month.
Tenants with higher energy costs, for example, those who rely on oxygen machines, receive a larger share to help offset their higher energy needs. So the program is expanding access to solar energy and saving money for people who most need the help. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
If I moved across the country, would you move with me? If I moved right back, would you stay? How do I tell you I'm falling out of love with myself, and that you don't taste quite as sweet as you used to, but maybe nothing does. Nothing might be sweeter than you. Maybe nothing does. Nothing might be sweeter than you, like being alone, looking up tree trunks, holding granite chunks, waiting in cold water, waiting to die in love. Oh, to die in love with the company I'll never know, craving company of no one. With the company I'll never know, craving company of nothing. Oh, did I in love? Oh, did I in love? Oh, did I in love? In love? In love? Would you go to church when I'm not around? Would you pray to God that nothing has me now? I hope to be happy with nothing.
That's a little bit of the Rain Dogs live on the red carpet stage here in Studio 2K at KTO. That song is called Company of Nothing. It will be on their upcoming album that's going to be released in the beginning of 2026. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from listener-supported public media station KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Thanksgiving is around the corner. It's time for thanks and giving back. Imagine that, Thanksgiving. And one way you can help is via the St. Vincent de Paul's Thanksgiving Basket event. And to talk a little bit more about that and some other things, I'm joined now by Executive Director Jennifer Skinner. Welcome.
Thank you.
For being here, and also Chris Giannotti, who is the board president of St. Vincent de Paul's. We were talking about if it was said in Italy. I feel like I have to use my hand. I'd have to go Giannotti or something like that. But Giannotti is the board president. Gonna cheese for being here, Chris.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. So Thanksgiving is like, what are we, like 2 weeks away, 3 weeks, 2 weeks away?
2 weeks.
2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today. Okay, so there is a lot to prepare for most people, and they're having their family events and doing all the things, but you can also give back, right? And that's what we're here to talk about a little bit today, because Jennifer, tell me a little bit about the Thanksgiving basket. What happens? What does St. Vincent de Paul's do for the Thanksgiving baskets?
So we take requests via either online on our website and or you can call our office and register to receive a basket. What that does is get a family number size so that we know that we're getting the right amount of food for the right size family. It identifies maybe food restrictions and things like that via our online application for it. And then it is orchestrated into a spreadsheet that is divided out, and we have volunteers come in on the 22nd this year, which is the Saturday before Thanksgiving, and we go out two at a time. It is our model at St. Vincent de Paul to do things in pairs. And so they go out and they deliver these food baskets, boxes, bags, really, but to our families that have registered to receive one.
So, and is anybody allowed to register for a basket?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And that is something that you can do at the website?
Correct.
Okay, you want to give the website out?
Yes, svdpjuno.org stands for St. Vincent de Paul.
svdpjuno.org. Mm-hmm. And that is where you can sign up to receive a basket.
Yes, and if you don't have access to internet and need some extra or need extra assistance, you can call our office directly and our office staff can help you register for a basket.
And go ahead and give that number out.
That phone number is 907. Hang on.
It's sometimes hard to remember.
It is. That one I don't call. I don't call that number.
I know. So. You get called.
We get called for sure. Let me look that up real quick so I get you guys the right one.
And Chris, we're here while she's looking that number up. I know we're also, you need people to donate to help fill the baskets.
Right. We need help in three ways. One is identifying who needs a basket. So if you know of somebody who needs a basket, who's down on their having a bad year, whatever, and you know you can't invite them to dinner for whatever reason, you can sign up somebody or encourage them to sign up. But we need the phone number, we need the address, and we need how many people are being served. Donations for food, we've got collection baskets at a number of Love, Inc. churches, Chapel by the Lake, Valley Baptist, Church of the Nazarene, St. Paul's Catholic Church in the Valley, and the Cathedral Catholic Cathedral downtown, and I'm sure I'm missing a few. But we all have collection baskets, and we're looking for canned beans, canned corn, canned yams, instant mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce, turkey gravy mix or chicken gravy mix, chicken broth, and stuffing mix, and if you want to give, those places all take dry goods, but if you want to give frozen turkeys, a pie and or butter, you got to bring that to our Teal Street family shelter, which is the two-story blue building just down the street from the Glory Hall, and there'll be somebody there who can take the turkeys and put them in a freezer. So
yeah, so perishable items, and that address is 8617 Teal Street here in Juneau. That's for the turkeys and the pies and things that are perishable that need to be stored between now and when you deliver these baskets on Saturday, next Saturday, I guess, a week from this Saturday.
Yes, that's correct.
And how how many people do you serve every year? Do you know?
Probably you'll hand out around 500 meals this year.
500?
Yeah, we're already at record numbers for the time of year that we're at. We usually don't see the numbers that we have registered until later into next week, and we're already at over 370 meals registered.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're anticipating quite
a
bump.
It's a big need this year.
It is a big need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big need. And, of course, all the perishable items that that Chris mentioned, the non-perishable items, you can donate at a lot of the different churches around town.
Yeah.
I'm sure that is that information on the website as well?
Yeah, we have a whole flyer up and a way to sign up and donate at those very locations, if you're familiar with the churches that are collecting for us. If that's not somewhere you visit often, that's okay. You can also bring non-perishables to the office. We will happily accept them. And that's 8619 TL Street. We're just right next door on our little campus there. Our direct phone number at the office, I did find it, is 907-789-5535.
5535. 5535. 789 for those. And that, well, I want to point something out that Chris mentioned that I think is pretty valuable, is that some people may be a little more shy about signing up or embarrassed to sign up or whatnot, but you can sign somebody up that you know is in need. Or if maybe you have somebody who doesn't have a deliverable address, you can accept it for them and then give that to them, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, if you want to help delivering, same thing, same website, svdpjuno.org, and there's an events tab, and you click on that, and it'll get you the Thanksgiving meal program thing, and there's a, you want to help volunteer to deliver, you click on that. You know, obviously, if we're trying to keep people from not spending all day delivering stuff, you know, only a couple hours, then we're going to need a whole bunch of teams.
You need a bunch of teams of two. And so you could even sign up with a buddy, right? And
absolutely.
Like make it happen and deliver. How many people, I guess it depends on how many people sign up to deliver, but I'm imagining if you have 500 meals to deliver, that's, you know, 20 to 30 per group maybe, or however many that's going
to be. We try to get it a lot less than that.
Yeah. Okay.
But some places like Mountain View Senior Center, you know, the site manager comes out and we deliver.
You can do a bunch of meals.
30
at
of
once.
Them there.
Right, right.
And
okay.
The meals at our own shelter, you know, we take care of those. So, but yeah, there's, and you know, this is a great opportunity to show if you've got some teenage kids to have them accompany you. There should always be somebody over 21 that's in the car and making sure things are all kosher. But, you know, and we've had people say this is really fun. It's like being Santa Claus. Right.
Yeah, we have some couples that come back year after year and make it a day date. And it's just part of their annual giving is to come and deliver food baskets. And it's just super fulfilling. It's a really great way to give time. But, you know, some people don't have a commitment where they can, you know, go to a board meeting every month or something like that.
Right.
And so this is a great opportunity to give back to our wonderful, generous community, but also be a part of that love and giving during this holiday season.
This is Juno Afternoon. We're talking with St. Vincent de Paul about the Thanksgiving basket event. Let me just run down again what the things are. So there's people who can sign up to receive a basket. If you're a family in need or you know a family in need or a person in need, you can sign up for the baskets at svdpjuno.org. You can sign up and you can give dietary restrictions, all that good stuff. So that's one thing that happens. Or you can call 789-5535 and sign up if you don't have internet, or if you know somebody who doesn't have internet, you can help them by having them call that number. And then there's people who can donate food. You need food to deliver, right? So there's perishable items, non-perishable items, and those are available to be dropped off at various locations. And then you also need volunteers to deliver these meals. So you could either give food and deliver, or one or the other, depending upon your situation. And this is all going to take place, the delivery is the next Saturday.
Yeah, the 22nd of November, and we will receive and allow donations to come in all the way up until the 20th.
Oh, till the 20th, so up until Thursday. And what are your office hours at Teal Street that people can donate?
Yeah, we're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay, 9 to 4 out at Teal Street if you want to donate, or at one of the various churches around town. There's a ton of them that are accepting these non-perishable items. If you have perishable items, take them over to St. Vincent de Paul. And that's a Thanksgiving basket serving almost, you're going to serve 500 meals this year.
We think so, yeah. It's a moving target.
Yeah, you already have 370 or whatever. That's amazing. And that, you know, it's, we're, we're dealing with a lot recently with food scarcity. We had the whole government shutdown with the SNAP benefits and all of that. Have you seen an increase in requests because of the government shutdown and things like that, Jennifer?
Yes, absolutely. We've definitely felt the crunch this month more than last month. Most SNAP beneficiaries got their money last month, but not so much this month. And so we have been seeing a huge uptick in need for food. And we do have a food pantry at St. Vincent de Paul. So we do our best to stretch it and meet everyone's needs throughout the community.
And then I know you're also, we talked about this, I think, a month or so ago before it opened, but you are you're running the emergency cold weather shelter this year. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's going so far? It opened up in the middle of October, right?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. October 15th through April 15th. Those are our running operational times where we receive patrons. We are doing pretty well. Our numbers are a little bit lower as of right now, but we're still averaging about 32 patrons a night, which we anticipate to go up pretty drastically soon.
And that is, where is the shelter located?
It's 1325 East Dahway in Thane.
Okay, and out in Thane. Yeah, I heard this morning that the Juneau Police Department is going to be clearing out the tent city, basically, over there out on Teal Street. As snow may increase and things, you know, snow plows are going to come through. And anyway, there's going to be displaced folks who maybe haven't been taking part at the shelter so far. So it sounds like, are you able to handle the capacity of those folks out in behind the Nugget Mall there on Teal Street to have them relocate to Thane at the emergency shelter?
Yes, we're prepared for an increase. We can serve up to 50 patrons pretty comfortably. We tend to not turn anyone away, especially when it's really, really cold out. We try to find alternative placement after they've come. You know, we'll partner with our other community partners and local shelters to see if there's more appropriate placement if our numbers get too high. But we're confident that we can meet the needs of those that are in the encampments right now.
And have you seen, I know you said that you're averaging around 32, I think you said, per night, 32 folks. Where else are people able to go in addition to the emergency shelter? I know there's the Glory Hall, but they seem, I know that Kaya was just talking about that they're at capacity basically every night.
Yeah.
And so is there a need for more shelters?
It does appear that there needs to be more drop-in services available for folks experiencing homelessness.
And do you think that we need to have them in different locations around town? Is Thane, it seems like Thane is serving sort of downtown area, but a lot of these folks are out on Teal Street, which is a little bit difficult in terms of distance.
Transportation is a major factor for our Thane location, but we do provide transportation. We go out into the Teal Street area every evening to pick up patrons and bring them down to our warming shelter. We also do sweeps throughout the downtown area. It's all scheduled into our nightly practice up until 1 o'clock in the morning, and that's about when we stop offering services. But we do have a warming shelter phone that people can call, and if they're in dire straits and it's outside of that 1 o'clock hour, we'll do our very best to go and get them and bring them to our safe space at the warming shelter.
Excellent. And can I put you on the spot again? And
I do know.
You know that one. So this is for folks that might need to get a pickup to go to the shelter. You
correct.
Can give that number.
907-500-2222.
Oh, that's an easy one.
That's why I know it.
500-2222 is the number for that. But it is that time of year. It's Thanksgiving. It's the Thanksgiving baskets. You can go to svdpjuno.org to sign up for a basket or to find out more information about all the different things that you can donate or sign up to be a volunteer to help deliver. It's an excellent, what a wonderful, heartwarming thing to do. And to offer to the community from St. Vincent de Paul.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris, for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer, as always, for coming in. I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you, Boston. Have a great holiday if we don't talk before then.
You too. I really appreciate it. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Bird Note. Over 12,000 miles across at its widest point, you might think the Pacific Ocean is a barrier that even high-flying birds can't cross. Think again. Some species make the trip every year as part of their life cycle. Ancient Polynesians knew long ago that birds crossed the world's largest ocean, and they used the movements of birds across the Pacific to help navigate during long sea voyages. Today, GPS tracking technology is revealing the incredible details of birds' migrations over the water. After breeding in Alaska, shorebirds called Pacific golden plovers fly all the way to the South Pacific, thousands of miles and several days' flight away. During the spring migration, bar-tailed godwits break up their trip from New Zealand to Alaska with a stop in the Yellow Sea off the coast of East Asia. But for their winter migration, they fly from North America to New Zealand without stopping. The longest recorded godwit journey is over 8,000 miles of uninterrupted flight. While there's a lot we know about bird migration, exactly how these birds' tiny bodies can sustain a week of flight without stopping is still a mystery. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
You are listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm Boston Christopher. Rain Billings is a master's student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks in Juneau. Her research focuses on the behavior and social networks of salmon-eating killer whales along the northwest coast, particularly in southeast Alaska and Washington State. I cannot wait to talk to Rain about this. Rain is doing a presentation tomorrow, sponsored by the Juneau Audubon Society. It's November 13th at 6:30 p.m. out at the Egan Lecture Hall at the University of Alaska Southeast Campus. It's free and open to the public. It's called Killer Whale Friendships, Understanding Animal Relationships in Conservation. And it is presented by Rain Billings, who I welcome to the studio now. Gunath Chishwasiati, how are you, Rain?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, as always, we also have from Juneau Audubon Society, Brenda Wright. Gunath Chish for being here, Brenda.
Good to see you again.
Thank you so much. Okay, so tell me first, I'm going to start with you, Brenda. Tell me about the public programs and these monthly meetings that you do.
Yeah, we're really excited for the whole season. It starts October through April, second Thursday of every month. We might move around a little bit this year. We have an opportunity to do dark skies at the planetarium in March. Dark skies, yeah.
What is that?
Well, dark skies are kind of important to see stars.
Okay.
And very, very, very important for birds to migrate.
Oh, interesting. Well, I'm sure we'll learn all about that when that event comes
up. Long time ago.
Yeah. right from now. But tomorrow night's presentation, this is going to also include elections for the Juneau Audubon Society board?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so does the meeting happen and then the talk happens, or how does that work?
Yeah, because we're such a very, very large group of people, the meeting part usually takes 5 to 7 minutes.
You had me going there for sure. I love that. Okay, so it doesn't take very long.
No.
And then you get right to the business.
Yes.
Okay. And what's coming up after Rain's talk? What's the next one?
In December, we're going to have Antarctica.
Oh,
photos
perfect
from Antarctica and stories behind the scenes.
Ooh, I like that. Okay, so we'll look forward to that. But tomorrow, November 13th at 6:30 p.m., is going to be Rain Billings' talk, The Killer Whale Friendships, Understanding Animal Relationships and Conservation. So, Rain, first of all, let's get to know you a little bit. You're from Juneau?
I grew up in Florida.
You grew up in Florida?
Yeah, so
okay.
Opposite side of the country.
Wow. How did you get to here?
Well, I got my bachelor's degree at the University of Alaska Southeast here
okay.
in Juneau.
Okay.
I started in 2019 and graduated in 2023. So I lived here for 4 years, and then I started my master's at UAF. I was in Seattle for about a year and a half. Studying the killer whales down there, and then I just moved back here to do some work on the killer whales up here as well.
Okay, so, oh man, so many questions. So let's start with, why did you choose UAS? Was it their marine biology program?
That was a big part of it. Another big thing is I just always wanted to live in Alaska.
being from Florida, I guess
yeah.
that would be kind of romantic, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I visited here in 2018 and I just loved it.
Okay.
And, you know, I had been living in Washington for 2 years before I started my bachelor's degree, doing some work with killer whales down in Washington. And I knew I wanted to go to college, that I could do more research. That's always what interested me, was doing research. UAS has an amazing marine biology program. There's faculty who do work on whales that's really similar to what I wanted to do. And I just fell in love with Juneau. So I just knew I wanted to live here.
And then you decided to go to UAF for a master's degree. Why UAF for master's?
Well, UAF had just started a new program, which is their marine policy degree, and that's the program that I'm in. And I really liked the degree program because it was very interdisciplinary. And my work kind of bridges the gap between science and conservation policy. So a lot of what I do is right at the intersection of that. So I really liked the potential to study policy because it's something I didn't know a lot about. And it's really important for conservation, which is my main passion with whales.
Okay, so then my next question goes all the way back to Florida. Mm-hmm. How does someone from Florida get interested in killer whales? When did that start?
They've always been my favorite animal.
So from when you were little?
Before I can remember. I have infant pictures of me with killer whale stuffed animals.
Okay.
So I've just always loved them. I grew up surrounded by a lot of media that involved dolphins and killer whales, like Free Willy.
Mm.
And I grew up going to SeaWorld. When I grew up going there, it was kind of before we knew a lot about the impact on the populations that the SeaWorld captures
mm-hmm.
had. And it was a lot more normalized to go to places like that. And so I grew up doing that, and I fell in love with them. I wanted to be a killer whale trainer when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
So I spent as much time as I could around them. And then once I got older and I learned more about them, I realized, this probably wasn't good for the animals to be in captivity and to be captured from the wild. So I shifted my interest towards researching them and conserving them in the wild.
I see. Okay, that's really, wow, that's fascinating. And is a killer whale the same as, is orca the same thing, or is that their official name?
Yeah, so killer whale and orca are the same animal.
Okay.
So you can use either term. Orca is kind of a nickname. It comes from their scientific name, which is Orcinus orca.
Okay.
So orca is just shortened. But, in the scientific world, we usually use killer whale.
Okay, great. And so when you switched your thinking to conservation and policy around that, what did you start to learn? What was it that sort of hooked you into thinking about policy and conservation?
Yeah, it's kind of a sad story. So before I went to college, right after I graduated high school, I moved to Washington. I moved to San Juan Island in particular. That's where some of the best whale watching of killer whales in the country is. And I started working with research, and I started working in education around killer whales.
Mm.
And in 2018, there was a killer whale who had a calf. The whale's name was Tahlequah, and she had this calf who was stillborn. And she carried the calf with her for 17 days over 1,000 miles.
Oh, wow.
And I was part of the team that observed this, and we took daily observations of her. And at the same time, we had another killer whale calf. She was about 3 years old, and she became really sick. And we tried everything, even giving her antibiotics. We tried hand-feeding her salmon, and she ended up passing away.
Mm.
And it was these two stories that really made me think about policy and how policy works to conserve species. The killer whales in Washington that I study, they're called the southern resident killer whales. They're critically endangered, one of the most endangered marine mammal populations on the planet. And there's only 74 left in the entire world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so policy is really important with them. So, you know, I guess I kind of just, ever since I started working with killer whales, policy has just always been at the forefront of my mind. You know, when you're working with a population of animals that is so endangered, it's hard to forget about policy and how policy is the thing that is what's actually making change, and that science and policy have to go hand in hand to see changes.
Mm. And so where do you find policy at right now?
Yeah, so that's something I'm going to talk about a lot in my talk tomorrow. So right now, when it comes to the southern residents, we use this conventional monitoring technique, which is where basically we say, okay, these animals, most of their diet is king salmon. So in years where the king salmon abundance is low, we can estimate that the whales are not going to do well. Mm. But that's what's called a time lagged factor, which means that because we're looking at the diet, there's always going to be a delay. You know, if you start eating poorly for a couple weeks, you might not notice the true impacts till months down the line. It's the same for the whales. You know, if they have a summer where they don't eat as much, we might not see the true impacts of that till a year or two down the line. So what my research is focused on is trying to find indicators that we can use in the moment. So we're specifically looking at behavior. Animals can change their behavior instantaneously in response to their environment. So just to give an example, you know, in years where there's low salmon abundance, the killer whales, their group size is smaller. We see more spread out animals. They're not in these tight social groups like they usually are. That's something we can look at in that moment and say, okay, we've been looking at these animals for 2 weeks. Every day they've been really spread out. That's telling us that they're responding to poor environmental conditions.
Mm.
So that's what my work is focused on, is trying to remove that lag wherever possible so that we can have these indicators that are really time sensitive.
That's interesting. So are they separating because they're trying to go off and find their own thing and they don't want to share? Or is it like that? Or is it something different?
So it's most likely that there's just fewer salmon, so they're having to spread out more to find the same amount of fish.
Okay, yeah. So they're just having – they can't swim in groups because there's just not enough to feed them.
Exactly.
So they're like, hey, buddy, I got to go over here, and you go over there, and we're going to – you know, you go to your secret spot, I'll go to my secret spot, and we'll hopefully find something to eat.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And so does that take – and then you're talking about the intersection. So your research is trying to figure that out, those mm-hmm. indicators. And then are you taking that then to who uses the research? Is it the government? Is it the people making rules and regulations? Is it the wildlife department? How does that work?
Yeah, so the hope is that we can take these indicators and use them in two ways. So one way is that, you know, if we can identify a certain amount of indicators, we can share that among the research groups that study these animals, and then everyone can kind of keep their eye out for these indicators. So we can have better monitoring, like I mentioned earlier, without that lag.
Mm-hmm.
But we are trying to get some of these indicators better put into a management framework. An example of that is another indicator we're looking at is their acoustic calls. So salmon-eating killer whales are very chatty animals. They're almost always talking to each other. But one thing we've noticed, and this is something we've been studying for over two decades now, is that in the presence of vessels, their acoustic calls are louder and longer, which is likely because they're having to communicate over the vessel noise. But, you know, in Washington, we have a really extensive network of hydrophones, which are underwater microphones. We already have the capacity to be listening to them live. So theoretically, we could build into a management framework that if we're hearing these acoustic calls be louder and longer for a certain period of time, we can put more restrictions on viewing distance from whales. So basically, if we notice that the whales are having to speak louder to communicate over boats, we can say, okay, for this set time period, whether it be a day, a week, a month, the boats have to stay further away to give the animals the space they need.
Wow. This is fascinating, Brenda. What a wonderful topic this is going to be.
I know. It's amazing.
This is going to be tomorrow. It's the Killer Whale Friendships, Understanding Animal Relationships for Conservation. It's going to be November 13th. That's tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. at the Egan Lecture Hall out at UAS. It's sponsored by the Juno Audubon Society. Now, when you put friendship in the title of your talk, what is that part about?
Yeah, so that is the social network analysis. So, you know, my research is kind of split into two different projects. So I'm working on my master's project, which is the social network analysis. And basically what that is, you know, we look at how many times an individual whale hangs out with all the other whales in its pod. And by collecting that data, we can make these giant networks that show us basically who's friends with who in the population. And that's really interesting information. And specifically what I'm trying to do for my master's is compare the social networks of the pods in Washington with the pods here in Juneau. The killer whale pods here in Juneau are very healthy. And just to give an example of that, the entire southern resident population is 74 animals. That's the entire population. One pod of the Alaska residents we see here in Juneau, AG pod, is over 70 animals. So we're seeing one pod, which is the size of an entire population.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So by studying the way they form these relationships, we can gain insights into how they spread information among each other. Another reason that's really interesting is we can actually model how disease would spread through a population. So theoretically, if we can understand which animals are the most social and have the most social connections among each other, if we were to start vaccinating individuals, we would start with those ones. We're trying to figure out how could we create sort of herd immunity among killer whales. Which is really interesting because, you know, when you have an entire population that's only 74 animals, you can imagine a disease could wipe out a population really fast.
That would be tragic.
Yeah.
So you're finishing your master's degree. Mm-hmm. And then what is your – I'm just curious what your hope is. What do you want to do after you graduate?
Well, I'd really like to do a PhD. That's my plan. I've been working on my master's. I'm graduating in the spring. This is my second year. And my master's research, it's pretty theoretical. I'm kind of taking a lot of these ideas that have been kind of ambiguous and floating around the field of ecology for the past couple of years and saying, here's how these could be applied to killer whales. What I want to do for my PhD is actually take that hard data and say, this was my idea for my master's. This is the data. This is how I analyzed it. And, you know, hopefully my ideas will be true. The data will show that. But if not, then afterwards I'll come up with new ideas.
I love it. Where do we follow you to find out more, follow your research, Rain? Is there a place to follow you?
Yeah, you're welcome to follow me on Facebook, just Rain Billings. I post updates about my research there pretty often. You can also follow me on LinkedIn. And then, of course, you know, I love doing talks and I love being part of the community. So I always try to talk whenever I can.
Excellent. It's the Juno Audubon Society public program tomorrow, November 13th, 6:30 p.m. out at the Egan Lecture Hall. It's Killer Whale Friendships, Understanding Animal Relationships and Conservation. It's presented by Rain Billings. Gunath Cheesh for being here. Thank you so much, Rain. And Brenda, thank you so much for this series and continuing to come and visit us here at Juno Afternoon. Gunath Cheesh.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, a preview of the upcoming Icefield Quartet concert. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello out the road. You can find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. You can also find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you, never more important than now. And Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh!